Today marks the anniversary of the death of Founding Father Alexander Hamilton. It was on this day in 1804 when he was killed by our sitting Vice President, Aaron Burr. Yes, I said that right. One of our Vice Presidents killed a man while in office. Not only a man, but a Founding Father. Thanks to Lin-Manuel Miranda and his Broadway show Hamilton, this story continues to live on over two centuries later. If you aren't a musical fan or have been living under a rock since 2015 when Hamilton came out, then you're in luck. Today I'm going to cover exactly who both men are, the relationship, and how it became deadly. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and you're listening to the Chronicles of Time. Let's dive in to the duel between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. The year of Alexander Hamilton's birth is debated between the years of 1755 and 1757, but 57 is widely agreed upon. His mother, Rachel, had been married at a very young age, but with her first marriage ending, she met James Hamilton and went on to have two sons with him. But there was a problem. Her divorce was not yet finalized, making her children with James illegitimate. The pair lived in the British West Indies, where they would raise their boys until James abandoned the family in 1766. Only 2 years later, Rachel would die, leaving her sons as orphans. Alexander was not yet a teen and had already suffered significantly, but he kept moving forward with a fire in his eye. At the age of only 15, Alexander was published in the Royal Danish American Gazette. In his piece, he described in great detail a hurricane that had happened to the island. This astonished and captivated locals so much that they raised money to send Alexander to America to get a proper education. When Alexander first arrived in America in 1772, he went to New Jersey for schooling. He quickly moved on and attended King's College, which is now Columbia University in New York. You could already see the future Founding Father's mind at work while in college, as he would write, defending the Continental Congress. The American colonies were already on the brink of war with the British. So when the Revolutionary War officially began in 1773, Alexander quit school to join the fight. He did quite the job because in 1776, he had caught the attention of General George Washington. Soon he began working under General Washington and assisting at camp. As Hamilton was building up his reputation with an elite political society, he met his future wife, Eliza. He and Eliza would go on to have 8 children together. Many of their children would go on to follow in the careers of their father. And it's fair to say that Alexander played a role in the surrendering of the British, because he was field commander at the Battle of Yorktown, the last major battle of the Revolutionary War. Hamilton was quite the prestigious man after the war. He returned back to New York to study law and quickly passed the bar exam. His work as a lawyer was exquisite, and to no surprise, he entered the world of politics. In 1787, Hamilton was one of the 3 delegates from New York to attend the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia. He quickly became an outspoken figure among the men, yet influential. He, John Jay, and future President James Madison would write the Federalist Papers, a series of essays defending the Constitution. In total, there were 85, but Hamilton himself wrote 51. Once George Washington was elected our first Commander-in-Chief in 1787, he named Hamilton the Secretary of the United States Treasury. During this time, Hamilton would gain some skeptics and enemies due to his financial policies. One of his biggest opposers was Thomas Jefferson, who was then Secretary of State. It sometimes seemed like a game of tug-of-war between the two men. In 1795, Hamilton would resign his Treasury post and return to practicing law. However, he would heavily assist President Washington when writing his farewell address, leaving yet another written masterpiece. But the next year would bring a world of trouble into Hamilton's life. Hamilton had had an affair with one married Maria Reynolds. All was fine and dandy for him until Mr. James Reynolds, husband of Maria, spilled the beans about the affair to Hamilton's political adversaries. James also accused Hamilton of financial misdoings. Hamilton believed the best way to clear his name would be to come clean about the affair. He did so by releasing the Reynolds pamphlet. The pamphlet admitted to the affair with Maria, but also claims he was being extorted by her and James. This quite possibly was America's first sex scandal, and it put to rest any chance Hamilton had at becoming president. But most importantly, it shook his marriage to wife Eliza to the core. In 1801, tragedy would strike the Hamilton family again when their oldest son Philip was killed in a duel. The entire reason the duel even occurred was to defend his father's honor that was being attacked by a New York lawyer. The remaining 3 years of Hamilton's life we will discuss. But first we should meet Aaron Burr. Aaron Burr was born in New Jersey in 1756 to a very well-off family. His father was the second president of Princeton, and his grandfather was Jonathan Edwards, a famous theologian. Like Hamilton, he became an orphan at a very young age. Both of his parents died when he was only 2, leaving him to be raised by his uncle. By the age of 13, he was attending Princeton, where he graduated 3 years later. In 1775, he would join the fight against Great Britain and also served in General Washington's staff. He would serve until 1779, then he'd studied law in New York and started his own practice. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? He would also enter his own life of politics. He would serve one term in the State Assembly of New York in 1784, and in 1789, the governor of New York made Burr attorney general. By 1791, he was a senator of the United States and aligned with Thomas Jefferson and the Democrat Republicans. In fact, in the election of 1800, he was chosen to be Thomas Jefferson's vice president against John Adams. There was a small problem, though. When the votes came back, Jefferson and Burr had the same amount. The House of Representatives had to determine the election, and Thomas Jefferson was the winner. It's believed that Alexander Hamilton played a large role in persuading members of the House to vote for Jefferson. It was after this election when the 12th Amendment would be put in place, revising the process of presidential elections. As you can imagine, the relationship between Thomas Jefferson and Aaron Burr was strained after the election. Jefferson kept Burr out of the loop and pushed him aside. In the 1804 election, Jefferson completely dropped Burr's name from the ticket and replaced it with George Clinton. At this point, Burr began to look at a different political party for his future, considering he wouldn't be vice president for much longer. He decided to run for the governor of New York as a Federalist. Now that we have discussed the two men's lives, we must take a look at how they intertwined with one another. Hamilton and Burr met in the 1770s as they ran in the same social and political circles. Both worked under General George Washington, but weren't exactly what you'd call friends. The one situation that fueled the rivalry was in 1771 when Aaron Burr defeated Philip Schuyler, Hamilton's father-in-law, and won his New York Senate seat. Hamilton and Burr would also be political enemies, and in 1804, Hamilton referenced that there had been 15 years of competition between the men, and he was not shy about how he felt about Burr. In fact, while at a dinner, Hamilton was what you nowadays would say dogging Burr, saying that he is a dangerous man who couldn't be trusted. That statement was actually published in the Albany Register, and when Burr read the statement, he had just lost the governor's race and was absolutely infuriated. He felt as if his honor as both a man and politician were being tarnished. He and Hamilton would exchange heated and bitter letters, where Burr demanded he apologize for the comments he made. But Hamilton explained he meant what he said, so he couldn't apologize. To this, Burr challenged Hamilton to a duel, and Hamilton accepted. In the 18th and 19th century, the honor of a man was critical to him and the people around. The practice of dueling was actually commonplace at the time, even if it wasn't legal. Hamilton and Burr agreed the duel would occur on Wednesday, July 12th at dawn, at Weehawken, New Jersey. This is actually the same location that Hamilton's son had died during a duel just 3 years earlier, and both Burr and Hamilton rode across the Hudson River separately with their seconds. A second is a person who acts as an assistant or witness during a duel. There is also a medical doctor present in case the worst shall occur. Each man had a .56 caliber dueling pistol that they would be shooting with. But who fired the first shot remains a mystery, because there are various accounts. The one consistent thing is that two shots were fired within seconds of one another. Hamilton's shot hit a tree branch above, obviously missing Burr. And Hamilton's second said that this was deliberate, and I believe so as well, because Hamilton had written just days before the duel, "I have resolved to reserve and throw away my first fire, and I have thoughts of even reserving my second." But Hamilton didn't get a chance for a second shot, because Burr's shot pierced Hamilton's liver, lodging into his spine and making him instantly fall to the ground. He was brought back to New York for medical attention, and his family was given the information. Eliza and the children would make it in time to say farewell. But he had written farewell letters just in case the unthinkable should happen. And it happened 36 hours after the duel. Alexander Hamilton would pass away on July 12, 1804. He is buried at the Trinity Church in New York, and his tomb can be visited today. A group of gentlemen actually bought Hamilton's house and went on to sell it back to Eliza for half the price to alleviate some of her financial burdens. After Aaron Burr shot and killed Alexander Hamilton, he fled south, facing murder charges. But of course, because he was rich and knew the right people, the charges were eventually dropped. He returned to Washington, D.C. to finish the remainder of his vice presidency. But he would find himself in more trouble when in 1807 he was put on trial for treason. Burr had supposedly been conspiring to seize control of western states. But he would get out of this too, as he was exonerated from the case. He would flee to Europe, knowing how big of a disgrace he was in the United States. Eventually, he would return to New York and quietly practice law. He died at the age of 80, but will always be remembered in history, and not for the right reasons. The story of the duel still amazes me after all this time. Yes, it's one of the most infamous duels, but I feel as if more people should know about this. I mean, do I need to scream from the rooftops? One of our vice presidents killed a man while in office. Because come on, if Kamala Harris killed her political rival, people would be talking. And why isn't this taught more in school? This is American history, even if it's the not-so-pretty side. We must not erase history just because we aren't proud of it. Thank you for listening to this episode over the duel between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. If you like this episode, give me a rating and review. And go show off all your new American history knowledge, you smarty pants. I love making the show for you all, and I appreciate every listener that makes it possible. Follow my Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok for more content, and don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel. New episodes are released every Wednesday. I'm your host, Rachel Payton. Thank you for listening to the Chronicles of Time.